The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Start hitting shots at home.
Yes.
Stop getting outshot by every team that comes in the building. And I feel like teams are looking at the Golden One Center like, hey, let's get in there like it's a short field in baseball. Yeah. Like, oh man, it's only 301 out there to left field.
Right field at Yankee Stadium. Yeah. The Kings once again, let's see, did it help? I wasn't paying attention. But once again, they did shoot around in the arena. Mm. I saw that with Sean Cunningham. I don't know if they did that on Friday night.
Oh, memory serves.
The first time we noticed it was when they played Toronto.
I can't remember because I think they were talking to guys like in the hallway or something. Mm. Like instead of talking to them on the court, like they were talking like in the hallway.
Yeah, maybe they did. Didn't help them that day. But against Toronto, they scored, 120-something points, 122 points? I don't know what the three-pointers were looking like that game, but that was the first time at least we noticed them doing shoot-around in the arena.
Yeah, Kings was what you were right. It was 122 that night, and they shot, well, Kenny, they shot 28% from three. They were 10 of 35. The good news. They were 10 of 30. The Raptors were 10 of 34.
Well, so they okay. Yeah, well, look, you didn't get beat by 30 points from beyond the arc, like what's been going on as of late. So I'll take it.
Well, small victories, man. We'll take that one.
I'll take it. 10 is better than 3. Because 3 is what they made against the Clippers. 3 three-pointers.
So tremendous.
And now Sean Cunningham is talking to people in front of the seats. So I don't know where they have these guys talking half the time. I'm trying to see if Sean has anything from last Friday about where they were doing shoot around. I don't know.
Internet. Well, how about this? Don't do whatever you did Friday.
Whatever. Eat something different. Yeah, take a different route to
yeah.
Just do something completely different.
Just acknowledge, like, hey, this didn't go well. Let's
go. Keon in the hallway.
Yo, Keon in the hallway. Was that Friday?
Yeah.
Keon in the hallway is crazy.
There goes Keon in the hallway.
Where did you say they were today? You couldn't tell?
They were in front of the seats.
So,
like where,
so that
like
means,
where Scott Moak would be interviewing them.
Okay, so they're on the court then.
They're on the court today.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know where they were at on Friday. It feels like just by being at the hall in the hallway, they probably did do shoot around in the arena. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
But there's Herder in the hallway.
I told you. Well, I don't know. They've never done that before. I don't know why they was out there in the hallway.
They haven't done that.
I don't know why they was out there in the hallway, but
oh man,
hey guys, come over here. Let's chat. I'm not sure. Maybe James is in the hallway. I don't know, man.
Maybe James is in the hallway.
Maybe James just said, "The hell with all of this. I'm tired of this."
But you know, I do. It's blind faith, but I do think they're gonna start shooting.
I'll ask you less of a, and we could bring James in here, and we can ask James the same question. But I'd be curious to hear your answer, Hammer. What's happening, man?
What's going on, guys?
If who would you consider? No one is shooting great from three, obviously. Who would be the most important player that, like, hey, if this player got to like 38, 39, 40% on the season, man, that would be massive for Sacramento. Is there a particular player? And maybe the answer is it doesn't matter, any one of them. But is there one that you would think, man, if this player is shooting 38% from three, Kings would be in great, great shape?
I mean, for me, it would probably be Keegan.
Okay, that's what I thought too.
Yeah, I think he's just the guy that in the starting lineup that you need to space the floor, and you need him to be a big-time threat. I mean, it'd help if Kevin Herter got there too, and if De'Aaron Fox got there
That's
too.
That's who I was going to go with. De'Aaron takes almost 20 shots a game. And if he got to the point where he's hitting 40% of his threes, that'd be my wish.
I got you. I mean, he's always going to be the volume shooter. But I don't know. I feel like his points will always come.
True.
I feel like Keegan's point total could explode if he's hitting threes.
It's a good point.
Especially with
he's the one who is relying on it.
Yeah, especially with the way he's working on the boards. Mm-hmm. I just know we can't have 7 points from starters again combined.
Yeah, that was tough.
No.
That can't happen. Hammer, I think you could probably articulate this a little bit better than I can. How important is this stretch, this home court stretch, from like a fan perspective?
Oh, I think it's big. I mean, look, the Kings don't leave the state of California until after Thanksgiving. So they play one game away from Golden One Center, and it's down in LA at Staples against, well, no, it's not at Staples. It's at the new stadium against the Clippers, right? So like, look, this is a huge part of the schedule where not only can you like start to build some momentum at home, but you can also get a little bit of rest. So like there's a back to back on Friday, Saturday coming up, and the Kings are stuck in the middle of this five games in 7 nights, right? But they need to catch their breath. You know, the road trip, I think it was good for bonding and all that stuff. They had a good 3-1 road trip, but that was like 8,000 miles. And then boom, you're right back at it, and you've got no time to take a breath. I think this is one point where they can settle in, they can, you know, sleep in their own beds, sort of normalize life again, and maybe make up some ground on the Western Conference.
And in that stretch, you got obviously, I guess it is 4 games and 5 nights coming up or something like that. But after Atlanta, you got almost a whole week off. You don't play again until Friday. So you play on Monday at home, and then you don't go to the Clippers until Friday. So maybe that's the time when you can, you know, kind of catch your breath a little bit.
Yeah, totally. I mean, right now, this is the fourth game, the third game in 4 nights right now that they're playing. But the problem is it's also the first game of a 3 games in 4 night stretch because they play another back-to-back on Thursday, on Friday and Saturday. Like, this schedule has been really, really brutal. There are no down days. There are no off days to practice. We talked about it when we were trying to, you know, figure out when Trey Lyles would get some practice time. But it also goes for, like, when does this team have extra time to go get in the gym and shoot 1,000 three-pointers? And the answer is they don't. They don't until next week when they get a little bit of a respite. But for today, like, it's been a tough schedule. It's been every other day or back-to-backs or, you know, the road trip since the season started. I think they've only had one extra day off the entire time. And that's not great, you know. It's tough to go out there and play every day, and it's tough when things aren't going right to make a bunch of adjustments. You know, I think they do need to make an adjustment on the defensive end, which is why they're giving up all these three-pointers, I think, on the offensive end. I think it's easier to fix what's happening on the offensive end than it is on the defensive end. The offensive end is pretty simple. Guys need to start hitting their shots. Mm-hmm. On the defensive end, like, you got a situation where you have to figure out how to fix that. Mm-hmm. And however you need to figure this out, you have to close the gap where you're getting outscored by 15 points a night at the three-point line. So whether that's you hit five more threes and don't get better defensively, or you hit four more threes and you limit your opponent to one less three, however it is, you got to figure out how to close that gap. Mm-hmm. And you need to do it really quickly.
How difficult is it difficult in your conversations with coaches, both head coaches and assistant coaches and so on, playing a team like in short order like this? I know the back-to-backs have become really popular, like the back-to-backs, meaning we were talking about, I can't remember, I think we were just talking about Denver. They've got Memphis and Memphis coming up on the road. It's they're at Memphis, they stay a night, then they're at Memphis. But the Kings having Phoenix here a couple of times in short order, do coaches look at that as like a disadvantage, as an advantage, or is that only something we kind of talk about?
I think they look at it as a little bit of a mini playoff series. That's how I've always, like, most coaches describe it as a mini playoff series. But look, I think with Phoenix in particular, you're not going to face the exact same Phoenix team that you did on Sunday. Bradley Beal is now questionable. Grayson Allen is questionable. But Yusuf Nurkic isn't on the injury list today. Kevin Durant, of course, is out. But this team could look totally different. If Nurkic is playing, 25, 30 minutes a night, as opposed to the 8 minutes, to be honest with you, I think that plays into the Kings' advantage. I think, Nurkic is a perfectly fine player, but Sabonis usually plays really well against him, as opposed to Mason Plumlee, that I don't think Sabonis does usually play well against. So if you have to rely on Plumlee to play 30-plus minutes, I think the Suns are okay, where Nurkic, I just don't think, can hold up nearly as well against Sabonis. But again, we might not see Grayson Allen, we might not see Bradley Beal tonight. So I think that that's the one thing that I would point out, that while you're playing the same team twice, they're also on the second night of a back-to-back. And this is a game where you need to take advantage of a shorthanded club without one of their superstars.
And one of the things that I feel like we saw on Monday against San Antonio is the Kings came out with decent energy, good energy, had a lead and all this other stuff. But in the second half, that's where it felt like the back-to-back thing came into play, and they couldn't hit a shot. They didn't have the bounce in their step the way you would want them to. And I would look to try to do the same thing to Phoenix. You know what I mean? They may come out ready to go, but, in that third quarter, something that this team has kind of gotten away from in the last handful of games of, kind of turning their game up in the third quarter, get back to that. Get back to, trying to get some defensive stops and get out on the run and see if you can take advantage of them, possibly having some tired legs.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key, right? Everybody plays back-to-backs. You can't use it as an excuse, and you also can't just say, hey, we're going to lose the second night of every back-to-back, so we're just going to take 15 losses to open the season. Or even if you say we're going to go 5-10, in those games, that's not good enough. Like, not if you want to be a playoff team. So this is it's tough for everybody. Utah to Sacramento isn't exactly a short plane flight. You got some weird time change there, but at least I think they pick up an hour, right, moving backwards. This isn't like a horrible travel schedule for Phoenix. But if you're going to use the back-to-back as an excuse on one side, then you better show up when another team has a back-to-back and you have an opportunity to, sort of punish them for playing the night before. And, I don't know if the Kings can do that right now. They just feel a little bit off. But saying that, still, if you take away, they lost two to open the season and they're 6-5, right? So what are they, 6-2 or 6-3 over their last nine? That's really not that bad.
Are you concerned about this second unit, about the bench over the course of the next couple of weeks with Malik Monk, who was clearly the primary scorer in that group, being out?
I'm more concerned that Mike Brown coming into that had already played all of his starters like 37, 38 minutes a night. I mean, we looked, was it yesterday? The Kings have the top 4 minutes per game players in the NBA. Like, crazy. It's crazy to look at. DeMar DeRozan followed by Keegan Murray and De'Aaron Fox, and then Domantas Sabonis are 1, 2, 3, and 4 in minutes played in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And then you lose Malik Monk. You are already relying so heavily on your starters, and now you got to rely more on them. So what you're hoping is that someone like Trey Lyles can step up and continue to sort of climb out of his early season slump, which I think we've seen over the last two games. But I need to see the same thing from Keon Ellis. Like, make it so Mike Brown doesn't have a choice. He's got to put you on the court, and he's got to put you on the court because you're just playing better, and he needs you on the court. And if you do that, I think that it will start to lessen the load on the starters. But it's not the best situation to be in. And look, there isn't a lot of teams around the league that have, you know, a Malik Monk coming off the bench and then another Malik Monk behind that guy in case Malik Monk gets hurt. And so what are you supposed to do? I mean, this isn't like something that I think that Monty and Wes made a mistake here and didn't have enough depth as scorers and stuff. It's just going to be on Mike to stagger his rotations a little bit more, opposite maybe a DeMar DeRozan a little bit more. And then you're going to need either Jordan McLaughlin or Doug McDermott or someone who is a fringe rotation player at this point, that 8.5, 9, 9.5 guy to step up and be a legitimate option. You know, if McDermott comes in and hits 4 threes, goes 4 for 6 and scores 12 points, this team is going to be just fine. Mm-hmm. If they can't find that from somebody, then it's going to be a little bit of a struggle here until Malik's back. And I think they really missed him against San Antonio. Mm-hmm. He just brings the energy. And in that game, they really felt like they were lacking that specific thing. They could not figure out how to sort of will themselves into the game. And that's where Monk usually steps on the court and instantly brings a buzz to the lineup. And you didn't have it. And so you got to manufacture that. Or the other option is, you've just got to be so good offensively that it doesn't really matter whether Malik Monk's coming in the game or not. Hmm. Just put teams away because you're that good offensively. Share the ball, you know, move the ball a lot more than they have been lately, and just sort of like win as a team. Don't try to win it as one individual.
When, do you think with Mike Brown playing those type of minutes with the starters? Is it more so he just doesn't trust the bench yet, or they haven't played well? Because I know Trey Lyles is kind of struggled, but I think Keon has played well when he's been out there. Jordan McLaughlin, he doesn't get a lot of minutes. I don't think he's played bad when he's out there, but like I mentioned the other day, there are moments where it's just a matchup problem with him. And then Alex Lynn, when he plays, I don't think he's played bad as well. Do you think it's he just doesn't trust them, or they haven't given him anything to trust?
Well, I think the numbers show you that the second that you pull Keegan Murray off the floor, you're in trouble. The second you pull Domantas Sabonis off the floor, you're in trouble. Like, there's very specific players that this team can't live without right now, and it's because the players behind them either aren't playing well enough or don't play the same style or just can't keep up. You know, again, it's one thing to have a Domantas Sabonis in your starting lineup, but when he goes off the court, it's like, how are you going to ask Alex Lynn to replace what Domantas Sabonis does? He's got to be a different version of him. So I don't know, like the trust thing, like, look, I can point out to the back half of this roster and tell you that the back half of this roster is like development. And I'm not being disrespectful. That's just like Colby Jones. And you got two young guys who are development guys, you know, in your first pick, and Devin Carter and Orlando Robinson. Those guys are both development guys, and they will be all year. You know, this is a third season for Orlando Robinson, and he's not a starter. He's not a guy who's played 25, 30 minutes a game. And then on top of that, you know, you only have a 14-man roster. So how many at the end of that roster are you gonna trust? And, you know, could Mike play some of his two-way players a little bit? Okay. I'm not sure. You know, maybe Mason Jones could fill in and be like a Malik Monk light. You know, maybe you can get Isaac Jones to play some minutes at the four here and there. But that's a lot to ask, especially in a Western Conference that where everybody is 6-5 or better. And, you know, you don't have an opportunity to fall behind, because if you fall behind, you could never catch up. And so I get it. You know, I understand relying heavily on the players that, like, look at their starting lineup. Their starting lineup is the best plus minus, or it was like a couple of games ago, net rating, like in the NBA. So what do you do when the next group comes in and isn't nearly as effective? And you try to get them to be better. You try to mix and match some of your rotations, your lineups and stuff. But sometimes there's no real answer for that.
So real quick, I just want to ask James this, though, hearing everything that he said. Why did they cut Jaden McDaniels? Like, they need a body like Keegan Murray, right? And they have that in the building, and they cut him, and they didn't have anybody to take that spot. Like, Kobe Jones ain't ready. I don't think Isaac Jones is ready. Like, and now we're 3 weeks into the season, we're talking about, man, they can't even go to the bench. I'm not saying he's the savior, but that's at least another guy that you could have put out there for 5 minutes a half to be out there. To your point, I agree with you. They don't have anybody that can sub in for Keegan Murray. They don't have anybody. Mm-hmm. They either got small guards or an Alex Lynn. They don't have anybody. And they had somebody there, and they cut him to not replace him with anybody.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, they cut him for two reasons. Number one, they cut him because I don't think he was good enough. And it's not like he's picked up on another NBA roster or was claimed off waivers, because he hasn't been, not least that I've seen. Number two, they cut him because they traded him because there was a team that was willing to take his salary, and it dropped them below the luxury tax. And so, I mean, it's a reality of the situation that the Kings intentionally did that to get below the luxury tax. Now, it also frees up money for them to go and make other moves, for sure. But the other avenue here is that they went out and they picked up Doug McDermott because they wanted more shooting. They wanted more offense. And, like, to be honest, like, you can try to point fingers here at a coach or at, you know, one specific player, but when your entire team outside of DeMar DeRozan, who doesn't shoot threes, and DeMontis Sabonis, who doesn't shoot threes, we walked into the season saying, if you're going to have a starting lineup with two guys who don't shoot a lot of threes, and they're the only two who are hitting their shots, like, what is a coach supposed to do? And, you know, I want to bring up, like, Keith Reed here in the chat says, you know, that the GM made mistakes. The issue is that Brown and his assistants have failed to define roles for their bench players. Like, what exactly do you think that they have told these guys? Hey, Alex Len, I'm going to need you to go out there and be DeMontis Sabonis. And if you don't, I'm going to find someone else who is. Like, what do you mean they haven't defined roles? That Keon Ellis knows exactly what he's supposed to do when he walks on the court. Mm-hmm. I mean, every single Doug McDermott, that guy ain't shy. He knows what he's supposed to do. If you think no one told Doug McDermott, hey, bro, you got a green light. Doug McDermott shoots every single time he touches the ball. Like, Trey Lyles has been there for 2 years with his coaching staff. Mm-hmm. They know exactly what their jobs are. Exactly. So I'm confused by, like, that type of comment, because at the end of the day, like, guys have to perform. You put them out on the court. Like, we talked about it yesterday. Like, the numbers for Keegan Murray missing 3-point wide open or open 3-point shots, he's shooting 17% on open 3-point shots. No one within 4 to 6 feet of him. Like, that's not a Mike Brown or a Luke Laux or a Doug Christie problem. That's not. Mm-hmm. So, like, let's be clear here. When you're missing threes, if the numbers say that you're not getting open looks, that's one thing. The coaching staff has created an environment where they are getting open looks. They just flat on aren't hitting them. Mm-hmm. And, like, at some point, like, you would say, well, then you got to find someone else. Okay. Who is that someone else? Who is it that's second on your team in rebounding and your only defensive player that's like top tier, or you're, you know, one of two or three really top tier defensive players in Keegan Murray? What you lose from Keegan stepping off the court versus when he's on it, like, there's no way to cover for that. And the fact that he's not hitting threes and is still one of the best net rating players that you have, just think if he was hitting threes, what the team would look like. And so, again, this isn't to call out Keegan Murray or anyone else on that team, but it's a reality. Like, if you're not hitting your shots, like, what is the coach supposed to do? This is almost the same exact team that they had last year, except for you got, you know, DeMar DeRozan shooting 40% from three as opposed to Harrison Barnes shooting 38% from three. And this team isn't shooting 36.6% from the three-point line. They're shooting 30%. They're down 6.5% shoot on their three-point shot and percentage. It's the same team. It's the same group of dudes. So I don't know what to say. It's sort of an awkward, you know, thing. Like, what's worse? And I'll ask Mike tonight, what do you think is the most difficult thing to fix? Defending the three or shooting the three? And he'll give an answer. But I don't know what the answer is fully. It sort of seemed like hitting more threes would be the easy thing to do because you have a bunch of really good 3-point shooters on your team.
Hammer, with all of this said, was Devin Carter a miss?
I don't know. Okay, so that's always it's going to be tough because I think it's always going to be a tough question to answer.
Sure.
Right?
Because he hasn't played. We don't know what he looks like, but that's part of the problem. Like, they didn't draft the body.
That's one less player.
Yeah.
In your disposal. Yeah.
And he can't dress.
Oh.
No.
Sorry, James. Go ahead. I don't think he has good style, James. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah.
The rook is fine.
It's not my style. I got to be honest.
James and the extra wide.
Yeah, I mean, like, look, was it a miss? I mean, would this team be better today with Dalton Connect or with who's the kid from Sacramento?
Jerry McCain.
Yeah, McCain. Yeah, maybe. I mean, today. And I certainly, like, the Dalton Connect thing, I'm not going to be able to wrap my head around fully. Like, I don't totally get that. Because I think that he was a really good option. But I also understand why they want Devin Carter, what it is that Devin Carter brings to the table that they really like about him. And, you know, and here's the other sort of caveat. Like, if you have McCain, right, who does McCain look like as an NBA player? The answer is Malik Monk. And you just signed Malik Monk to a 4-year deal. Like, Malik Monk is hurt today, but at the end of the day, like, he's supposed to be there, and that's why you don't draft a McCain. When you look at Devin Carter, I think they look at Devin Carter as a potential starter alongside De'Aaron Fox, and also a guy who can play the one and the two. And at this point, again, I don't think they feel super comfortable with McLaughlin playing major minutes at the one, and they would feel a lot more secure if they had Devin Carter, who's, you know, longer, athletic, more athletic, you know, not just a catch and shoot guy, a hustle player, a absolutely phenomenal rebounder, like all of these assets that that he brings to the table. I just don't. Is it a mistake? It might prove out to be, but I mean, you got to wait 2 years to really look and see what it looks like, maybe even three. And that doesn't always feel well. But I definitely will say this. If you're going to draft an older prospect and that older prospect is going to go in for shoulder surgery, like 2 weeks later, you better have known that that was the case and been really, really comfortable with the fact that he was going to miss 6 months as an older prospect, because that's part of the reason you don't draft a younger guy, because you don't want to wait. Mm-hmm. Right. And now you have an older guy that you have to wait for. And, you know, it's not like Devin Carter's, you know, 25 years old or anything, but, you know, there were younger prospects at that point, or even guys that would play right away. And so if you didn't know he wasn't going to play, then I'm not sure what's going on there. Mm-hmm. But if you did know that, then you've got to be really comfortable with the player you think he's going to be and how he fits your system.
Yeah. We'll come back. We'll spend a couple of more minutes with James Hamm before we send him off to the Golden One Center, and we'll get you ready for the Kings and the Suns tonight when D'Lo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
This is D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Sky River Casino.
James Hamm with us here for a few more minutes before we send him off to the Golden One Center to cover the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns tonight. We know Kevin Durant will be out. He was injured just before the first time that these two teams played. But we are watching the injury report for updates on Bradley Beal, Yusuf Nurkic, and Grayson Allen was the other one that we're watching. Not that any of it matters. We have seen things go very south when guys are missing.
86ers.
Oh, man. What a legendary. Oh, man. They might be better than the Philadelphia 76ers at this point. Hammer, I attempted to state this earlier, make this argument. Maybe it fell flat. This is a 6-5 team. Bill Parcells used to say you are. I think it was Bill Parcells used to say you are what your record says you are. This team feels better than a 6-5 team to me.
Yeah, I think, you know, Bill Parcells, when you're dealing with a 16-game season that he was dealing with, I think you're right. You know, the NFL level, you know, if this was a 6-5 NFL team, you probably are who you are. But it's just so early. If, like, by NFL standards, this is more like a 2-1 team. And you're saying you are what you are. So I think it's a little difficult to tell so far. And I do believe that this team should be better. But I also am waiting for this moment where the pieces fit together. Mm-hmm. I'm waiting for the moment, like we saw it in, I want to say it was game two or game three, where the ball just started hopping from one player to the next, to the next, to the next. And Keon Ellis gets a wide open three and hits the three. And, you know, we're just watching like this beautiful game. And I've kind of, like the last couple of weeks have not been like really great high level, like ball movement offense. It's been a lot of dribbling. It's been a lot of ISOs. You know, I watch a lot of games with my son and he's yelling at the screen that he can't watch like one more MIDI. You know, it's a bunch of mid range jump shots and, you know, that's who DeMar DeRozan is. And when it's going in, that's perfectly fine. But I also like when things are going horribly wrong with this team, which they didn't against San Antonio, where they had these 3- and 4-minute stretches without scoring. And every single shot is either a wayward three or a missed mid-range jump shot. Like, I get it. Like, somebody's got to take the ball to the rack. Somebody's got to get to the free throw line. And there's been a little bit of clunkiness with that. And, you know, I get like when Victor Wembanyama's in the game, that's it's scary. You know, we saw him block Sabonis at one time, but mm-hmm. I would have liked to have seen like 5 more opportunities for Sabonis to run him over in the post because they're not going to call Sabonis for a charge every time. And if he's going to sit there and flop and, you know, and you're going to have the opportunity to go around him and score. And, yeah, so I think that there is just like a weirdness to this team right now, but I also think that like 1 or 2 games of shots falling and we're going to see this team take off. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see this team in the next couple of games go off for like 135, 140 points. Mm-hmm. Because if the 3-point shot fall, you know, they're going to skyrocket as far as offense.
Do you think do you watch them and see or feel like they still have things that they're trying to work out as kind of a new group? And there's a lot of guys who have been here for a long time, but there's a major piece that just got here in DeMar DeRozan. I always have been saying about 15 games, you know, to kind of work some things out and kind of understand what they want to do as a collective group. Do you still see that from them out there, or do you think they kind of understand each other's roles and what they're trying to do?
No, I don't think that they're there yet. I mean, again, you look at the Phoenix game where DeRozan scores 16 in the fourth and 8 in the overtime, and Fox scores 8. And between those two guys, you had like 32 points right there, and I don't think a lot of other people scored. I still think that there is a little bit of imbalance. There's still a question mark about who should be taking what allotment of shots. And I think it changes from one night to the next. I think that, you know, we talk about the open three from Keegan Murray, right? And he's got a ton of them already. But like, just because it says on paper that it's open, it doesn't mean that you ever thought the ball was going to get to you and that you weren't 100% locked in on the possession, because the ball isn't hopping from one player to the next. The ball is really, really stagnant. And so it's always possible that like, he's just not in a ready catch and shoot mode like he should be, because he's ball watching like everybody else is. Like, that's kind of what this offense has regressed to at times. It's just a lot of one guy dribbling and a bunch of guys standing around and not even moving. So that's what you got to get away from. At 15 games, I'd like to tell you, you know, everything will be smoothed out, Casey, but that's four games from now, and I'm not sure that that's going to be the case. This might take longer. And, you know, as long as you're a little over 500 the whole time while you're figuring out who you're going to be, you should be okay, as long as there is like an epiphany moment where you do realize who and what you can be and start to play to your strengths and start hitting shots and start to take off. I just don't know that it's going to be game 15 or game 20. You just hope that it's sooner rather than later.
Can they survive? We were talking about this with Will Z a little bit. Like, they're hitting twos at a great clip. Like, they're one of the most effective in the league. They're just so bad from three. Like, can they survive if that is the continued formula for their offense?
If this is who they are, if they're a team that shoots 30% from three, then no. I mean, they're not a playoff team. Like, a team that gets outscored every single night by 15 points on the three from three. There's so few ways to make that up. That means you've got to be nearly perfect. And this team, like, really, they haven't turned the ball over. They've had, you know, a 6-turnover game by Sabonis. And even in that game, I think they turned the ball over 14 times as a team. They had the 7-turnover game by Fox. And even that one, I think they turned the ball over a total of 13 times. Mm. Like, this team hasn't made a lot of other mistakes. It's just the two red flag areas. You're giving up threes, and you're not hitting any threes. And again, I think that this team will end up shooting 36, 37% from three like they did last year. There's going to be a moment, but like, how long does that take? And why isn't it happening now? And, you know, I don't want to like sit here and start screaming, I want it now. But like, at the same time, like, you can't fall behind in the Western Conference, right? Mm. Like, the Western Conference is way too tough. You can make up some ground, and there will be some regression. You know, I don't care what our friend Drew Down thinks. There's no way the Golden State Warriors are going to, you know, win 65 games this season or whatever they're on pace for right now. You know, there's going to be some regression around you, but also there's a bunch of really, really good teams in the West, and you can't give away games.
Yeah. Make your shots. After all this that we've talked about, I'm back to that train now. Hit your threes, everything will be all right. They're hitting them at a historic, awful level right now. Once again, for about the 10th time in the last 2 days, just get to bad and everything will be okay. Just get to bad. You're anemic right now.
Why are we always begging them to not be awful at something? It's like free throw shooting, defense. No, that's all the thing in the past. Hey, just don't be freaking awful shooting the three.
It's the truth.
Really crazy. I mean, the free throw shooting thing is just bizarre, right?
It's incredible.
Yeah. Every single dude on the team is shooting like 82.5% or better. Everyone in the rotation. I mean, they lead the league in free throw shooting.
It's like they've been threatened or something. Like, your life depends on this. And they're like, all right, man, we got it.
I think we're all waiting for the moment where Kevin Huerter, who's taken, I think, two free throws on the entire season, but tells us, you know, I spent all off season and all I did was shoot free throws. And then what I realized is that I probably should have shot some three-point shots. Like, we're waiting for that moment. But, yeah, they seem to have fixed one problem, but this is like the old Dutch boy, you know. You plug one hole in the dam and another hole pops up and you're sitting there trying to figure out how to like stop all the leaks. And right now the leak is 3-point shooting and 3-point defense. You don't know the story of the Dutch boy?
No. All right. I mean, I understand the concept. I've never heard of the Dutch boy, though. I've heard of Davy Crockett. Is that the same thing?
No. Davy Crockett was a woodsman who, I believe, died at the Alamo, Kenny.
Oh, well, I didn't read that part of the story in fourth grade.
He wore a coonskin cap. Kenny, Davy Crockett and the Dutch boy. Have you ever seen Dutch boy paint?
Yes, I've seen that. I know that little guy. He's sitting on the little bench. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't read his book or watch his movie, though. Sorry.
This is such a unique show, man. Well.
Yeah.
You know what? That seems like a good place to let James leave. I mean, like, there's not going to be a better way to get out of this. James has to gather his things and get to the Golden One Center. And what are the lasting memories headed into tonight's game? The Dutch boy plugging the leaks.
That and Kenny not knowing that's not Davy Crockett.
And that
well, I knew it wasn't Davy Crockett, because Davy Crockett is Davy Crockett, not the Dutch boy. I knew it wasn't it. But
you just asked if it's the same thing.
No, is that the same era is what I'm saying. Because obviously Davy Crockett is not the Dutch boy. Two different names. Two different people.
You real? Okay. All right. This is Back to the Future 2 all over again. This is all over again. Hammer, get to the Golden One Center, man. We'll see you tonight. We'll be locked in for your conference with Mike Brown, though. I'm curious how that goes.
Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
All right.
You guys have a good show.
All right. Appreciate you, James. James on his way to the Golden One Center right now. Drive safe, James, also. It looks all right out here in Roseville, but who knows?
Ground was glistening a little bit about an hour ago.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm all for it, as long as it's not raining Friday night.
Please, no.
Because, we're back to having rain Friday. But that could mean, that could be rain, like, at night.
Hopefully.
First thing in the morning.
Well, I don't have rain on Friday.
You don't? No. Oh, I'm in Roseville. Maybe. Well,
yeah, I'm in Roseville, too.
Okay, well, Sacramento says no rain. So, Roseville, sorry, you're getting rain, pal. But apparently, Sacramento, the clouds are just going in a different direction.
Hopefully.
We're going to be outside Friday night out at the rail yards.
Yeah.
Probably our last time at these version of the rail yards. Who knows?
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's...
Who knows?
I can't wait to see what that's going to look like. I cannot wait. That's going to be very cool. It's about a 2-3-year process, but... I can't wait. Yeah. They've always talked about that as being like a second downtown when it's all said and done.
The rail yards?
Crazy. Yeah, just the bill. I know Kaiser's going to be over there. Obviously, mm-hmm. Got the soccer stadium. I think they're talking about they got a concert venue that they're going to put over there too. So that'll be really dope. I needed to rain threes for the Kings in the Golden One Center tonight.
You lost any confidence in this team?
No, not yet.
You're getting there. The way you said that.
I'm concerned about the shooting. I am concerned about the shooting. They haven't been able to shoot to save their life so far. And I'm really just hanging on to history and averages at this point, not what my two eyes are seeing. You know, my two eyes are seeing these guys can't shoot. But I'm still looking at it as like, they'll come around. I mean, Keegan Murray. Keegan Murray can't possibly be a 28% three-point shooter.
Yeah.
And especially when you talk about some of the looks they're getting. And I know James kind of explained the difference, but he is getting good looks. He is wide open, you know, a good number of times and just isn't making them. And I believe that'll change. But, you know, I want to see it. I want to see it change soon, because right now it's definitely upsetting and unnerving to see them continuously not shoot well from beyond the arc.
You talk about the eye test. I guess I just keep repeating the same thing, which is going to be impossible to say tomorrow if they're 6-6, which is a game difference. But I don't feel like this is a 6-5 basketball team. I don't feel like they've played like a 6-5 basketball team. They do a lot of things really well. They do a lot of things better than we've ever seen them do. We learned, you know, looking at the assist numbers, well, maybe they're not moving the ball the way that they used to. Part of that assist number, certainly they're not hitting shots at the clip at which they used to. But they have a lot of guys who can get you baskets. Like, I feel like it's not really sacrificing points with this team. But there's enough there on both sides of the ball where I watch them and go, this is a, they're as good as Minnesota, who's 6-5. Like, there is good as these teams out there that people consider conference contenders. But at some point, I can't keep leaning on that. Like, the sample right now, it's an 11-game sample size, and it's like, man, two of the last three were really tough. The Clippers was tough. The Spurs was a disaster. You go back and look at that Minnesota game, it's not too bad. It's really not. It sucks, but it's not that bad. Yeah. The Lakers game, killer. LeBron James, 21-0 run. That's what happened. That's what I'm telling my kids. Fine. Like, that sucks. The Raptors game, it didn't feel that bad at first, you didn't think it was the worst. But now that we look at it, it's like, okay, they've played 12 games. They've got two wins. This sucks. That's one where, like, maybe, I mean, if you told me the Kings are 8-3, that matches the eye test. They lose one of the first two. You tell me they're 7-4. I don't know if that matches up with the numbers right. I think they played, 7-4. That matches up. They're a game off of that right now. And 6-5, like, I think they're better than that.
Do you subscribe to the theory of Jason Jones when he says if this was an 11-game stretch in the middle of February, we wouldn't be thinking twice if they were, like, already a solid team?
Absolutely, right? Yeah.
You know, if they were already, I don't know what the number would be, but if they were 25-13,
sure,
and they had this 6-5 stretch in February, I don't think we'd bat an eye. You also look at that stretch, and they've played teams that, for argument's sake, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games. I'm talking about San Antonio, Toronto twice, Atlanta, Utah, Portland, that we don't think are playoff caliber teams. They've gone 4-2 in those two games. And the other ones you're playing against the playoff teams, and what is that, 3-2, 3-5 or something, or excuse me, 3-3. If it was a different point in the season and they had already established themselves as a different type of team, maybe we'd be looking at this stretch a little different.
Sure.
The difference is we haven't seen them establish themselves as a certain team yet, and that's where the angst comes into play.
And you can't even lean on last season because you know that there's a dramatically different component here, and you're still trying to, like, DeMar's working. But there's this facet of their game that's been really important to the way that they play that's no longer working.
Yeah.
And so it's angst, it's uneasiness, it's asking questions, it's picking apart stuff we probably don't need to pick apart. Mm-hmm. It's questioning a player that we haven't even seen play yet. Oh, wouldn't it be better if they had a guy who could wear a uniform instead of stupid wide leg pants?
Yo, his pass is fine.
Zip up hoodie.
His pass is fine. He's doing his thing. I'm okay with it. I'm not a big fan of the all black Supreme Air Force Ones, but, you know, all right, whatever. The rest of the ensembles are fine.
I'm probably being a little hard on his outfit, but I think he had like
opening night was disappointing. It was opening night.
So the dress code's just gone to hell now, huh?
Well, no, yeah, because Leak Fitz brings more attention to the league.
Well, no, but still, like, yeah. Devin Carter ain't getting on League Fitz.
We might.
He is not League Fitz worthy. Devin Carter is not League Fitz worthy. I like the subtleness of DeMar, and yeah. I'm not just saying that because he had an Essentials outfit on the other day.
It looked nice too.
Malik is Hall of Fame League Fitz. Yeah. Devin got his. Nah, he ain't there yet. I know. Don't scour League Fitz looking to see if Devin Carter on there.
I was trying to find Devin Carter, but is this? No, this ain't the same one. I don't follow him on. I guess I don't follow him on Instagram. This guy isn't Devin Carter.
I was going to say, did you just find a different Devin Carter?
Yeah, this guy's a football player, I guess. Where does he go? He goes to NC State. Okay. I was trying to see if I could grade him a little bit on some of the fits. I just remember being disappointed the first game of the season, but he's picked it up ever since.
Oh, yeah, I can't find him. Anybody know Devin Carter's Twitter, Instagram handle?
Maybe we're blocked because we talk.
Well, hey, salute, sir. Salute. Devin Carter basketball. Okay, what is this? What the hell just happened to my... All right, man. Just forget it. Just forget it, dude. This day has been so stupid. Tune in tomorrow to Joe and KC.
Joe and KC. Oh, man. Yeah, maybe he doesn't have an Instagram.
Probably because of the way he dresses.
Well, once again... He's fine. He's fine.
Devin Carter Instagram page. Devin Carter Sacramento King. Okay, maybe this is it. Stand by. Maybe we got him. There he is. Okay, hang on. I think it's gone. Yeah, I don't think he has one. Well, yeah, because I found his. I think his agency.
Okay.
And they linked to an. It's an old account.
Yeah, the Kings don't even tag him, in none of these Instagrams. So
let's try maybe this one. Doesn't. Yeah, no, I think he said goodbye to Instagram.
He's fine as a dresser. He's fine. He's fine. Maybe he's over at Blue Sky now. That's what everybody's doing now. Are you on Blue Sky?
Is that app?
Yeah,
I'm not getting on a social media. I'm not getting on another social media app. Y'all did this stupid stuff with Threads.
The thread. Yeah, Threads is popping.
And all it is you just got to post somewhere else. Like I'm not doing that. I don't post on Twitter. I don't post on Threads. If you want to interact on social media, I'm going to Instagram and that's it. No. Oh wait. Oh no. Big John Poles found him.
Oh.
Big John Poles found him. All right. So I like Devin Carter's he looks sharp on
draft night.
He looks sharp. Mm-hmm. I think that was the last time he posted anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he don't post nothing. Let's see what his stories say. It's nothing. Nothing, man.
I'm giving him
if you don't post, you can't be League Fitz worthy.
Well, yeah, technically they're supposed to post for you, so there's that.
Well, no, his game ain't strong enough. Malik post?
Well, Malik post. Malik the game will be over for 30 seconds. You go to Malik's story. It's a highlight of him dunking. I'm like, yo, what? Malik, don't miss.
I love Malik.
You don't miss an opportunity to post IG after he did something.
He always posts his highlights. I
the game
love
will be over
Malik for that.
For 45 seconds, yep. And Malik got four things on his story. I'm like, yo, what the? The game just ended.
Four different dunks. Oh,
shout out
man.
To my boy Malik. Malik can do no wrong out here.
He
man.
Really can't.
He can do no wrong. That's
he,
my boy.
He really can't except roll on. Whose ankle? I don't even remember whose ankle it was.
It was Mason Plumlee.
That's who I thought. Yeah, it was the Phoenix
that
game.
That guy.
Head over to trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. I actually just posted a graphic over there. At Damian Barling on Instagram, if you want to check that out, see all the different supplements I take. It also has a link directly to trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. You can also use the link there on that page to get you to Maptrition. Get all of those supplements you see right there on my IG page. Again, it is trainwithmap.fit/ESPN1320. get ahead of things, headed into the new year. I know a lot of people, new year, new me, didn't want to get all healthy. Do what? Take the steps now. Mm-hmm. Put together a game plan now. You can meet with a nutritionist. You can have a nutritionist consultation completely free. You could do it by phone. You could do it by text. You could do it by email. You could do it by Zoom. You could do it in person. You could do it however you want to do it. You can also use their free macro calculator. We appreciate you so much for being with us. We're going to head over to 102.5 KSFM. We got some tickets to see Snoop Dogg over there.
Yeah.
Big shout out to our man Joe for holding things down. And we'll see you here tomorrow at 10 a.m., beginning with the Insiders on Sacramento Sports Leader, ESPN 1320.
Vamos Kings, light the beam!
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.